Let's open ourselves up for some of the wisdom of Satchidananda. We'll begin with the sound of Om. We'll breathe in a few breaths first. As we breathe in breath, let our light shine with each of a couple in breaths. And with a deep in breath. Steve was sharing with me earlier something from our adolescence, how to attract girls. This is an issue for adolescent boys who want something desperately and not sure how to get it, but know who has it. Sometimes learn things to say or not to say. It reminded me of something I've learned more recently in life, and that is we have a natural attractiveness, and what can we do to release that natural attractiveness? And what I've experienced recently is our natural attractiveness is something hard to name. It's like an inner light. Which I associate with breathing. Breathing in. My meditation is, hello, Albert.
Hello.
You are welcome.
Thank you.
Good morning again, Alberto.
Yes, good morning. Good morning. Sorry I'm late.
It's all good. It's all good.
It's all right. We just had a little Om.
Good.
To get ourselves spiritually oriented. And I was sharing a story Steve here told me. He learned some things to say as an adolescent to attract girls. What did you say?
It's men's class,
yeah. They got it, and we want it. They're not giving it to us. They're holding it back. It reminded me of something I've experienced recently, which I was sharing. And that is, we all have an inner light. Inner light. Hard to explain. And I experience it through my breath sometimes. I'm breathing in and letting that light just shine. Somehow it's there and I need to let it out. And I've experienced recently that when I do that, people come up to me and say hi. And it just happens. I can't explain it. But I know it has to do with allowing that light to shine. Can't prove it, I just know that. So I feel a blessing in that I have the light, you have the light. And like a gift, we give it to everyone with whom we come into contact.
So you think it's your light or your energy?
Yes.
Your light is energy, but...
Yes, yes. I use the word light. Energy is another good word. You could also use the words Christ consciousness, capital S self, which we've studied, or Atman, that energy that was around before we were born, and perhaps will be around after our bodies are gone. Whatever word works for you.
Okay.
We're going to look at that in some of these scriptures today. Some scriptures that have boggled my mind in the past because I'm such a logical computer engineering type guy. How to look underneath these scriptures and find the underlying truths.
I'm just curious about the conversation you had before. Since there's only four men, this is really unusual. No women in the class.
It's time to share it. Yeah.
I just thought it was really funny. Yes, looking around, there's actually zero women here.
I wish there were women. Women appreciate knowing things like this. They do. They have their own issues. Generally, they revolve around, am I attractive enough to have anybody interested in me? Or why isn't so-and-so, whom I'm attracted to, paying any attention to me? Maybe I need lipstick, makeup, dresses, something.
Hair. Yeah.
As adolescents, we all go through those things.
Just a quick thing. What we were talking about. We were talking about, what were the two
loquacious
words? Loquacious, which means talkative.
Yes. Talkative.
And it made me think of the best advice my older brother, my only brother, but he's older, gave me when we were young. He said, okay, when you meet a girl, ask her questions and listen, and ask her questions about herself, because we all like to feel listened to and heard and recognized, and it's been a good lesson through my life to be a good listener. I know you're a very good listener. I think there's also an opposite side, and I mentioned that. Elementary school friend, a guy who enables me whenever I see him to do the opposite. He listens to me, and I find myself being loquacious. But I always thank him for that, and he always acts like he's not doing anything special, that he enjoys listening to me.
One of the benefits of advancing age, as it advances, and so we learn more, become more in touch with ourselves, that special essence in us. Let's see what Mr. Satchidananda has for us today.
He does have a unique skill set to it. Very fascinating.
When I was an adolescent, I would listen if I heard that advice, but I really wouldn't listen. I just wanted something. To me, it was a manipulation. Because girls weren't people. They were things that had things that I wanted, and they weren't giving them. It was only later in life I was able to make friends with women.
I was raised as a Christian scientist, and all that physical stuff was not real. So there was a lot of
Well,
not later in life.
I think what happened is that those things at the moment has that value, but when we grow older, or we mature, we give value to other things that are more important that will help us continue live the rest of our life. And that's how it is. We value other things the more. Because the others you already experienced it. But these are the things you didn't experience then. But then you realize they are important at the time. So the right time, the right moment, the right situation, the right issues.
And here we are today at this time, in this place.
Affirming or emphasizing
yes.
those same issues.
Yes, so here we go. Are you ready?
Let's go.
All right, a path for personal spiritual transformation. We're going to look at Sri Swami Satchidananda's commentary on the Bhagavad Gita. Our primary focus will be on verses with practical spiritual advice. We're not going through them one by one. I'm going to skip around a bit. So, last week in the Bhagavad Gita, we looked at this verse. I am weighed down with weak-mindedness. I am confused and cannot understand my duty. I beg of you to say for sure what is right for me to do. I am your disciple. Please teach me. I have taken refuge in you. This was the point in the story where great prince Arjuna gave up and decided not to fight because he didn't want to kill his friends and relatives. Even though he knew it was his duty. So there are two issues here. One, he didn't want to do something that part of him thought was wrong. And the other issue was there was some duty required of him, something that was his to do that he was resisting. And this is what Lord Krishna, the charioteer, saw in him. So he's going to talk about that. We'll look at some more verses that follow verse 7. Verse 11. I'm jumping ahead a few verses. This is Lord Krishna talking to Arjuna. He said, you are grieving for those who should not be grieved for, while uttering would-be words of wisdom. The wise grieve neither for the living nor the dead. I had some issues with this the first time I saw it. We know that grieving is a natural process. And also there's grieving and there's grieving. There's the grieving that happens naturally. As, for example, when a child is walking on the sidewalk and you pinch him, hurts him. Oh, you hurt me. Oh, I'm sorry. Then he lets it go. And then there's the kind of hurt, oh, you pinched me. And 20 years later, he says, I remember. I'm going to forgive you for pinching me on the sidewalk. So retained emotions. Feelings are emotions we get attached to, water, have a part of our life. I think the grieving he's talking about here is that long-term grieving, not the natural grieving. The wise grieve neither for the living nor the dead. He says, Arjuna, you're grieving for those who should not be grieved for, while uttering would-be words of wisdom. These were his protestations. He didn't want to kill anybody feeling weak. But he had handed over to Arjuna, had handed over to Lord Krishna his willfulness and said, teach me, I take refuge in you, which is one of the first steps in spiritual growth, to open the door and realize. The main thing that we can know is we don't know. The main thing we can know is that all of the information we've collected up here is suspect. And always to be open for new revelations, even those that get in the way of ideas we've had for a long time. Things that our mothers and fathers told us, or older brothers. Knowing we don't really know. Would be words of wisdom. The wise grieve neither for the living nor the dead. Chapter 12. There was never a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor any of these ruling princes, and neither will there ever come a time when we cease to be. He's not talking about flesh here, is he? There was never a time when I did not exist, the divine, nor you, nor any of these ruling princes, and neither will there ever come a time when we cease to be. He's redirecting Arjuna's attention, isn't he? He's redirecting Arjuna's attention from our bodily persons that start off as babies, grow, change, get old, decay. There is some other essence which we may have experienced as a light during our little OM exercise, the light, our Christ consciousness and energy. I certainly can't explain it, and scriptures do talk about it. What's it like to talk about something that can't be described in words? And the scriptures do anyway, don't they? The beginning of the Tao Te Ching has these wonderful words. The Tao that can be told is not the eternal Tao. The name that can be named is not the eternal name. The nameless is the eternally real. This is a reference to the nameless. Naming is the source of manifestations. We name things, they show up for us. So there's some mystery here. And the Tao goes on, free from desire, you realize the mystery. Somehow our desires, our wants, our cravings, our aversions get us attached to our way of thinking so that we are not focused on that light or energy within us. And I believe that's what he's talking about. So if we are in the presence of our light, our energy, our capitalist self, if that's what we're aware of rather than what we're normally aware of, perhaps this starts to make more sense. There never was a time when I did not exist. That's a lowercase I. Usually we're thinking the uppercase I. Never was a time when lowercase I did not exist, nor lowercase you, nor any of these ruling princes. And neither will there ever come a time when we cease to be.
And that is during our... Is this talking about when during our lifespan or before and after? Before, during, and after?
Yes.
Yes to what?
This, to me, says there never was a time. 100 years ago, 1,000 years ago, there was something that exists in you now. 100 years from now, something will exist that's in you now. How to wrap our heads around that? It's a challenge for us. And these verses are drawing our attention to that so that we might be given permission to drop some of our old ideas, like I know what exists and doesn't exist. There's me and you and atoms and protons and gamma rays and gluons. Things come across space through billions of years of time, light, and that's what exists.
So isn't that what we call life? Life never dies, and it always existed.
Our minds aren't going to get it. Because we can look back to a time when so-called life, according to what scientists know, didn't appear to exist. you can look back to some time after the supposed point of the Big Bang and the stars were forming, there was no earth. Those are all mind things. These verses are drawing us to something that's the mind isn't going to figure out. So that's what we have to notice if we're willing to let go of our minds that have everything all figured out and see if we can experience, we're not going to know it, see if we can perhaps experience what these verses are getting.
That is an interesting point that I would like to touch for a minute if you give me that opportunity. If our mind wouldn't get, wouldn't get it because maybe we're not that. There's many things that have been,
maybe the mind's not designed for it.
Not designed, right. But how come this person who wrote this, how did he get to this point? I mean,
good question. If we can't figure it out, how does the person who wrote this know that? That's a good question.
Or that's what he's trying to illustrate.
Yeah, that's
the whole point.
Means that if he could get it, after him, anyone could, not anyone. You have to have that mindset.
There's a famous mystic, Sufi, called Rumi. Have you ever heard of Rumi, the famous mystic poet? Wonderful man, a mystic man. He said, to get at your question, we have two kinds of knowledge. Two kinds of knowledge. One is the knowledge we get from what is written in our workbooks in school and what our teachers, people we honor, tell us. There is another kind of knowledge which exists inside. You can't really explain it. And the words of the poet are, it's like a spring box flowing from within. Are we willing to be open to another kind of knowing that our minds could easily set aside? That's the challenge in these verses. We can choose to be open to that, maybe just for a little while, out of curiosity, knowing that our mind may disagree. And if we notice that our mind comes up with disagreements, what I will sometimes do is I will say, thank you, God, for my beautiful mind. It's doing a wonderful job. I am so grateful for it. It does what it's supposed to do. Which also leaves room for another kind of knowledge. There never was a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor any of these ruling princes, and neither will there ever come a time when we cease to be. That which is embodied, experiences the body's childhood, youth, and old age, and in time acquires another body. This was an insight in this particular line of spiritual understanding. We acquire other bodies. This does not disturb one whose mind is calm. From the point in ourselves of total calmness or peacefulness, or as Russ said in the sermon today, happiness, we can perhaps start to get in touch. That which is embodied experiences the body's childhood, youth, and old age, and in time acquires another body. This does not disturb one whose mind is calm.
So,
why get upset?
So disturb means upset?
Upset. Disturb means upset.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, this doesn't bother anyone whose mind is calm. We weren't here 100 years ago. Our mothers with the help of our fathers, bore us. We grew up. Here we are. One of these days, we're going to get more wrinkled and more decrepit. And then we're going to say, thank you, universe, and our consciousness will pass, and our bodies start to dissolve and decay. It says here, in time acquires another body, another way of looking at it in the mind. This does not disturb one whose mind is calm. Wouldn't it be wonderful to be calm about this process of birth and death? Here's Satchidananda's commentary. In terms of the Atman, or the reality of that light, or capital self, or energy, in terms of the Atman, the reality of the self, we always are. We always are. We always exist. It's not that we were once non-existent, have now come, and will stop existing later on. Our minds are going to perhaps argue with that. Good opportunity, saying thank you for your arguments. God bless you. You're doing what you're supposed to do. Be open for some other kind of book. Thank you. One with a calm mind isn't affected when the body undergoes changes. My body's been changing lately. The knee hurts, the ankle aches, and hearing's not so good in this area. It's pretty good in the other one. And most of my black hair is gone, a little bit back here. Changing. One of the calm mind isn't affected when the body undergoes changes. It was conceived, it grows up, dies, then decays, and decomposes. Makes for good manure. Plants can grow. There is impermanency in the body. How can that be the immortal capitalist self, or the immortal light, or the immortal energy? So Lord Krishna is explaining the nature of death, what is seen as the true nature of death. The Bhagavad Gita would assert that our idea of death is not a true understanding. There's another place from which we can look at our ideas about life. Death. Perhaps see it in a new light.
So on that point over there, number one, and the first one, one with a calm mind isn't affected when the body undergoes changes, is because we start accepting that there is where we're going to end up dead eventually. Therefore, the mind doesn't get disturbed.
It isn't disturbed. Can we say, thank you, God, for everything exactly the way it is today?
Yeah.
Everything the way it is right now. So grateful. Can we? This was Reverend's sermon today, wasn't it? Where he discussed two ways of looking at things and church money. And we look at it as a problem to be fearful about, or can our the church body has undergone some changes? Can we have our calm mind not be affected with that? Can we say about the church finances, for example, thank you, God, everything is in perfect order. I wonder what's mine to do. Or not. You wonder. Everything. Don't you feel relieved already? Everything's in perfect order. I don't have to worry about it. What was that wonderful sermon given a few weeks ago by
Charmaine?
Charmaine. But the guy who was all wife that worry, and one day a friend of his saw him and said, "What's the matter? You look great. You're not worried anymore." So, no, I hired a guy to worry for me. Remember that story?
Yeah.
Wow, he's sick. What a terrific idea. I wish I could find somebody like that. And the guy said, "Well, he's expensive." He said, "Really? How much?" $2,000 a week. "Oh my God, how are you going to pay for it?" That's his worry. He had a calm mind. He had a calm mind. We can give our worries up the same way to God. Say, "Thank you. I trust the world exactly as it is now. I trust the world exactly as I'm seeing it. I understand that my mind sometimes gets upset by things, and that's part of what I'm also observing. And I can step back from my own mind with a very slight smile on my face. Just say thank you." A calm mind isn't affected when things change. It has to do with the nature of death, and also to do with the nature of other things we worry about. Perhaps for many of us in our Western culture, death is one of the larger issues that we worry about. When the prospect of death comes up, perhaps other things that we've been worried about, the money, whatever, diminish, and prospect of death is a greater worry. And here is a teaching saying that even the prospect of death can be greeted with "Everything is exactly the way it should be. I'm so grateful that things turned out the way exactly as they are today." What in getting in the way of being grateful for that? What is it that I'm not seeing that I need to see to return to my light, my energy?
You know, like going back to that, where you say that I existed and I will never see. So there was a moment in your life that you said, I think I lived that this already.
Deja vu?
Like a deja vu thing.
Yes. And sometimes people report past lives.
Yeah.
Not me, but other people have said, "Oh, I had a past life." My wife said that in a past life I was a Buddhist monk. I don't remember. Our minds aren't going to get around this. We have a place inside of us where everything that needs to be known is known. Can we go there and see what is so for us? Notice that our minds talk to us and look in that deeper place to see what feels like clunk, or maybe be open to exploring it as an experience. Lord Krishna is explaining the nature of death. So here's some more verses and a little more commentary. The difference between the permanent and impermanent, the real and the unreal. This is a big teaching in these scriptures. It goes contrary to our Western way of thinking in many ways. Are we willing to be open to this teaching about the difference between the permanent and impermanent? Permanent being real and impermanent being unreal. That's the key to this. These ancient sages, when they wrote the Bhagavad Gita, supposedly were in deep meditation for a long time and had the realization that that which is impermanent changes shouldn't be called real. It's the unreal. And what is permanent is the real. Now, this goes against our whole scientific tradition where we have science to figure out what are facts and what's real. But remember, with regard to facts and what is real, how does science establish what is real? A scientist observes it. Another scientist recreates the same conditions, and he observes it, and maybe a third, and no one finds a circumstance where they observe this where it's not so. And then it's declared to be a fact. Until Einstein comes along and says, well, there's something you weren't looking at. And later on, they see light bending. Light doesn't travel in a straight line. It's affected by gravity and bends, and they measured it. Einstein somehow saw that. So our so-called real facts are really unreal. They're impermanent. They're subject to new observations and changes. And these sages found something that was permanent. They said, that's what's real. How do they find what's permanent? Not using their heads, but using their heart energy. Let's see what they had to say. Well, maybe not. I have it's 5 minutes to 11. So we can close now, or we can take another 5 minutes. Your choice. I did promise we'd close at 5 to 11. And we never get quite as far. So.
The conversations are more meaningful. Equally meaningful.
So what's the consensus of our group?
You have to be there. I've got to beat the unfortunate.
Yeah. Yeah, so we need to close now.
Okay.
We see our minds are working. See my mind works. Maybe I can get them asleep. Do another few things. That's my mind. See it? That's manipulative. 5 more minutes. And another part of me says, I promised we would be done at 5 to 11. And I know now that that's my duty. That's my duty. Close this off, 5 to 11. So I have to go with that. And say, thank you, Mike, for sharing. We'll get back to this one.
Okay.
We'd like to close with an om and use that om to take us deep into our light, our inner energy, that aspect of ourselves which is permanent and doesn't change. And be willing during the om process to see if we can experience it in some way. So we begin by focusing on our breath. For 2 or 3 breaths, going in and out. And deep in breath. Going to